All right, well, welcome here for the second session of the day. We're pleased to have Retta join us and share some of the experiences that he's had with the nonprofit sector broadly. I've been privileged to have been able to work with Retta on some of the details of getting this event pulled together and organized, and I've been impressed with his just his focus and his ability to pull details together and get things to happen. So I'll turn it over to you, Retta, and I'll observe any questions that come in, and I should mention for attendees here, if you do have questions as you're going through the presentation, feel free to ask them in the question tab. It's one of these blue bars that you'll see on your screen, and just post any questions there, and I'll field them in when Retta pauses for Q&A. Over to you.
Great. Thank you, George. So my name is Retta. I worked for many years with the International Federation of the Red Cross as the Senior Officer for Learning Systems. So the IFRC has responsibility for the learning needs of 17 million volunteers, 500,000 staff. So that was my basic introduction to the scale in learning. I have spent the last 8 months after leaving the IFRC engaging in conversations with people from all over the humanitarian and development sector, over 150 conversations with 64 different organizations to try to get a sense of what of some of the complexity that we're struggling with in the nonprofit, in the humanitarian and development sector. So that's, in fact, couldn't even make up my mind about the title for this presentation. But these are just some of the keywords that I'm hoping to address. First of all, by trying to provide some sort of practical experience-based sort of takeaways from what I have observed or been directly engaged with in building MOOCs or looking at the feasibility of building MOOCs within international organizations within the nonprofit sector. And then 5 and 6 are really a kind of leap into a kind of quantum leap, trying to sort of look at, go from this sort of modeling, very pragmatic, how do we make the decisions, how do we move forward, you know, linking technology and education, and leaping off to learning, innovation, and sustainability. So you will tell me how compelling the jump I will be making in the second part of the presentation is. So first of all, is the need for scale, and that's an easy argument to make within the humanitarian and development sector. So if you look just at the Red Cross, you've got 17 million volunteers, and what they do is they train, they learn first aid skills, and if you take first aid alone, each year the Red Crescent trains 17 million people to do first aid. And the Red Cross does it the old-fashioned way, so one workshop and training at a time, and it's been working pretty well for the last, you know, for the last century or so, first aid education. Now, those 17 million people then deliver assistance to 46 million people each year. So those skills are put to practical use, you know, in a number of. Now, there's other places where scale is easy to sort of to pick out. So if you take a global health issue like non-communicable disease, 30 million deaths. This is the single biggest, you know, so sort of killer, so a set of four diseases that's responsible for overwhelmingly for the global burden of disease and mortality. If you look at climate change, so this is a figure for next year, so this is not a decade away, and we're all beginning to feel this. You know, we're talking about 320 million people being affected. So scale is one of the reasons why we need sort of performance, and we need performance faster than ever before in the humanitarian and development sector. You know, we're looking at growing humanitarian needs and not enough people and not enough of the right skills for the people we do have in order to face up to these growing challenges, as well as, you know, a particular problem with formal education, where universities are delivering people who come out of development studies and other master's programs, and the people they're delivering to the sector basically are not fit for purpose and need to be retrained by the organizations in question. So you have the complexity, and you have the other things, the volatility, the uncertainty, and the ambiguousness. So I think that the humanitarian and development sectors are really on the outer cusp of all those things. Yes. So our ability to figure out how we take learning to scale, how we make education sort of accelerate these processes, I think is one of the key things we need to be struggling with. So now, with respect to MOOCs, I think it's a no-brainer that, you know, being the ability to deliver education on a massive scale, to open it up to the greatest number of people, to do it using technology, we desperately need to be able to do that. The real question for me is how. So working with organizations sort of in these conversations, I sort of try to pick out sort of things that we need to be thinking about in order to make the right decisions about how we build education to address these challenges. So there's alignment to the organizational mission. There's a content, production, marketing, and partnership. And I want to look at each of these with some specific sort of case study examples from projects I've either been directly involved with or somehow been engaged with. So on the content, you know, if you're a non-governmental organization, if you're an international organization of some kind, you have to decide, you know, sort of which of the three sort of kinds of content you can offer. So if you're a professional organization with a global mandate, you may be interested in making sure that your experts, your membership, has access to the most current knowledge. If you're finding that universities are not delivering, not properly preparing people, you may want to consider as an organization to deliver that foundational, you know, that foundational knowledge yourself and bring the sort of practice-based, experience-based approach through open online education. And third, but no less important, is really the ability to engage with civil society or with your stakeholders, with you know, at the policy level, to get people to sort of co-construct knowledge together about whatever, you know, thematic area you happen to be working in. But I do think you do have to sort of make a definite, you know, definite choices and pick where you're going to target this. So, for example, this is from a feasibility study, and this is a senior manager in one of the organizations I've been working with who just blurted out, you know, Oxford does a course on our project. We can do something 100 times better. So that, you know, that brings some interesting questions with respect to strategy and alignment. And, you know, MOOCs are new, certainly, but distance learning has been around for a while. The internet used to deliver learning has been around for a while. So these are some of the key questions which I think we need to be thinking about as nonprofit organizations, or, you know, about what is different about MOOCs from our organizational perspective, which is distinct from the debates you know, happening in higher education. And just thinking more about the learning function within your organization, how is learning currently organized, both the informal, but as well as the informal and the incidental part of learning? And what is learning likely to look like, you know, a few years from now? What problems could, you know, the current model for MOOCs solve at a particular point in time? And how do you assess, you know, whether it's feasible to do so? And one of the key questions that emerges is really about legitimacy. So, you know, if you're a nonprofit organization, you're probably doing training in some form, but from going from there to actually saying, well, we're going to provide education, which means competing with institutions traditionally, you know, so that have traditionally occupied that role, raises this question of legitimacy, and really thinking about what is the differentiator, what distinguishes what you're in a position to offer from what existing institutions of learning, and in particular higher education, are able to deliver. And this is really, you know, I think the positioning is really on the sort of sub-degree or certificate level competency-based qualifications. If you accept that you're going to work within the existing framework of you know, sort of formal credentialing for the learning that you believe can help your organization. So, on this issue of legitimacy, this is another quote from the same feasibility study. You know, turning our organization into a university is just not feasible. We don't have the capacity to perform its functions. So there's really two questions there. There's the legitimacy, but there's also, you know, the capacity question, which we'll look at in a couple of slides. Now, on the business model, I think for nonprofits, that's an interesting question. That's a relevant question, given the increasing pressure to do more with less funding and with diminishing resources being a stark reality for many organizations. So, you know, there's sort of back of the envelope calculations you can do fairly easily, where, you know, if you have 1,000 people who complete an online course, and if you think that they're willing to pay, you know, say €100 for a certificate, then you've got something which is similar to what universities were, you know, or MOOC providers were sort of highlighting just two years ago. And that's really where I think we're at now in terms of thinking through what the value of a certificate issued by an international organization, say the World Bank or OECD or the Red Cross, might be. And that's really, of course, very much context dependent. Now, to go back to that question of capacity, there's a sort of insourcing or outsourcing dilemma for an organization that wants to build its own online education. offering. And so there's one, obviously one of the basic choices is, do you go to a MOOC provider, Coursera or edX, and ask them to host your courses, or do you do it yourself? And I think that's one of the sort of very binary choices, even though you could also do both. There is that third choice. So this is from one of the IT administrators, who says only critical IT services are hosted internally on our own servers, implicitly saying that the online education would not be critical. But going beyond that, when you try to look at, to sort of break down what's involved in sort of setting up a MOOC for an organization, you've got a number of boxes, and a number of processes around, going from content development to learning design to data hosting to content delivery, learner management, marketing and communication and analytics. So this is for the same organization. Everything is in red. That's the gaps. That's what the organization currently does not have the internal capacity to do, and they're going to either have to hire staff, train existing staff, or get partner with an organization that has that capacity. The stuff in the orange is stuff that they're already doing, but not for online education, but that could potentially be fairly easily sort of repurposed or redirected to developing MOOCs or developing online education more generally. And the stuff in green, and there aren't that many green boxes, is the stuff that the organization already does, and that would not need sort of major repurposing or changes in order to contribute to the effort. So from that perspective, knowing that when you have that many gaps, MOOC providers do have an attractive value proposition. They can provide a number of services, the most basic of which is content hosting, but the brand association and the sort of marketing and reach, when you have a platform with six or seven million people registered on it, you do have value there that should be considered by the organization. One of the key problems though with these MOOC platforms is actually on the openness of the resources. So all of the platforms use proprietary formats. There's no standard at this point between, say, Google Course Builder and OpenEdX. You can't take the actual course experience, including the activities and the assessments, and put them somewhere else. There's no interoperability. And the number of the MOOC providers that I've spoken with basically say, look, if we've got a feature that another platform doesn't have, that's a competitive advantage. The last thing we'd want to do is to actually openly share that. And there's been a major push within international organizations led by UNESCO and the Commonwealth of Learning around OER. And at least with publications, there's a number of organizations that have adopted a Creative Commons license, and we want to make sure we retain that in this process of developing online education. So there's a whole laundry list of criteria to sort of consider for an organization that wants to take develop open massive online education. One more factor to consider is that online and distance learning are no longer new in most international governmental organizations or international NGOs. So here's a list of them put together by Abel Henry, I think a couple of years ago. So this is somewhat outdated, but it gives you a sense of, especially for UN system agencies, whether they're targeting staff or external audiences, their current scale, the platforms they're using. You can see a lot of Moodle, some sort of corporate LMSs. So one of the key questions in moving to MOOCs is, are MOOCs replacing the existing systems? Are they complementary, as we've just seen with the World Bank's Open Learning Campus? What's the logic? What's the strategy? How do you manage the change if there is one? Moving from some of these older systems for online and distance learning to MOOCs that represent what is new. So now, to talk about more specific examples, you've heard about the World Bank's Coursera MOOC, which was really one of the first out the gate and quite an impressive feat to be able to put that together and deliver successfully. So the partnership model there is a Coursera partnership. The content and production model are really relying on the internal capacity of the bank and relying, in fact, on an existing publication as the basis for the course content. Quite different, just to give you a sense of the diversity that I have observed in international organizations as they move towards massive open online education, is the Forum Academy. So this is a World Economic Forum. This is Davos with the annual general meeting once a year that brings together sort of global thought leaders. And what they're trying to do bring that thought leadership and package it using a MOOC format. So what's interesting is it's a partnership model. They've partnered with edX, but they're not part of the edX consortium. And in fact, they're using the Open edX platform, but that's about it. It's not a MOOC, formally speaking, and in fact, they prefer not to use the term. It's not open because the courses, there are no free courses. So the cost per seat is 300 Swiss francs, or roughly $300. And that's the first course on global technology leadership just launched. And basically, if you take this course, you get videos from 35 global thought leaders on what's changing in technology and what it means for business. So I think there's a value proposition there, but there's some distinct strategic choices that differentiate the Forum Academy from the others. Now, the one example I want to use to make the quantum leap I referred to in my introduction is the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Society's Healthy Lifestyle Community. So this is using Google Course Builder, but what's interesting is not the technical aspect, but it's really the partnership model, which is for the last few months, something quite new and I think quite interesting has been happening, which is that you've had a team of engineers from Google collaborating, working very closely with a team from the International Federation of the Red Cross. So you've had people getting to know each other, getting to know each other's working culture, learning from each other, and actually figuring out for the global health team that had never engaged in this kind of initiative before, figuring out how to build a course from scratch with the assistance with a little bit of help from Google's engineers. So you have what I think is a tremendously innovative corporate partnership, looking at that's been using the learning door, so using Google's course builder, using the university relations and research team at Google as a way of connecting these leaders to a humanitarian organization to solve this wicked problem of non-communicable diseases. And this, I think, now why use the learning door? The Red Cross has it's very well established sort of corporate social responsibility partnerships. Probably the oldest corporate partnership with Coca-Cola is over 100 years old, and I think it really has to do with the changing nature of knowledge. And in today's world, I believe that the key to sort of doing meaningful sustainability initiatives, these kinds of initiatives are more likely to happen through learning processes because of the kind of economy that we are in, and because of the way so much of what happens in society, what's happening around humanitarian and development issues, as well as in business, is being driven by knowledge processes. So there's a number of issues which I think make this particular partnership and this alliance between Google and the Red Cross, between two of the world's biggest brands, between this 150-year-old behemoth that is the World Red Cross, Red Crescent movement, and Google, that contains the seeds for something very interesting in terms of the kind of sustainability initiatives that we need in the future. So I'm thinking of, and I'd like to, I'm interested in exploring whether what's happening between Google and IFRC right now is replicable, and whether with other organizations, because no one organization is going to solve the kinds of humanitarian challenges that we're facing alone, whether it's replicable and whether there is a way to, the potential to build a network connecting learning leaders from the corporate sector that are doing tremendously innovative stuff, driven by business needs and by mission, with academics who are doing the research, who are doing the sort of the analysis and hopefully generating the data and the stuff that can inform the choices that need to be made, and the nonprofit learning leaders that are really going through this transition from the traditional learning education and training model of workshops and classroom-based stuff, and that are being sort of pushed to accelerate those processes, knowing that the current way we do things is not going to deliver what we need. So we really need to be doing new things in new ways, and it is more likely to happen by exploring MOOCs, by exploring learning, than in the sort of many other avenues for partnership innovation and change, driving processes. So the idea is really to see whether bringing together corporate, nonprofit, and academic brands can happen through that learning door. So even though probably only a few chief learning officers see as part of their mandate, part of their role, this question of sustainability, it might be owned by another unit within the organization, I think it's definitely worth exploring to see if there are new ways of doing new things around, such as, and I believe this initiative, this partnership between Google and IFRC is a kind of first example or pilot or proof of concept in a number of ways for this approach. So that is it for my presentation. I took less time than I expected, so I'm quite pleased by that. I hope I did not go too fast. Even though I believe in acceleration, that doesn't apply to speech and delivery of talks. So thanks for listening, and I hope that you have lots of questions.
Thanks, Ren. I'm just waiting to see if there's any questions dropped in. I currently don't see any in the forum, so I'll just direct a few questions your way quickly. So based on the work that you've done, what do you think are the biggest gaps and skill-wise that's needed for NGOs to start offering MOOCs? You had that very informative chart where you listed the different aspects of, really, I guess, digital learning broadly and how different parts of it for organizational preparedness. There was an awful lot of red on that chart. So if you were to interact with an NGO, and realizing that some really core things, like I would say learning design and delivery and analytics, I mean, these are all important things that help inform an organization in running any type of learning event. What would you list as being their most critical areas of attention that these types of organizations need to attend to?
So, I mean, this is one example. Many organizations have sort of well-developed learning functions. If you take the World Bank, they have sort of 10 years of e-learning under their belt. But even, but what I'm finding is actually, I mean, the understanding of sort of how the nature of knowledge has changed, and going further, what that means for the work of the organization and what the consequences, what the implications are. I think that's the biggest gap that I can see, is that a lot of the stuff that's now sort of well established, actually in the corporate learning and certainly in academia, through your work amongst others, about the changing nature of knowledge, I think that needs to be the starting point. And implicitly, is really, I think that most organizations seem to be sort of in at least midway through the transition of sort of understanding that technology, online distance learning can deliver learning outcomes that are at least as good as face-to-face. I think that's well on the way. I think that's there's still organizations struggling with that, but it's sort of people have gotten used to the fact that they have to do some sort of online learning module before they go to a face-to-face training. A lot of it is blended and so on. So that's not really the biggest issue. I think it's the combination of how exactly you mix technology with pedagogy, and of course you see all the usual sort of things that we're seeing in many ways with the debates around MOOCs, where sort of people put technology first and don't really look at sort of learning theory or learning processes as they think through what they're trying to, the objectives that they're trying to accomplish. So it's really that that transition from old forms of learning to new ways of learning that I think is key.
And that raises quite an interesting concern that I've encountered several times with organizations that I've chatted with, that if they have a very strong presence in digital learning or e-learning or online learning, whatever they call it, it almost seems like they have a harder time wrapping their head around learning at scale. Have you found that being successful with e-learning actually can be a bit of an impediment for making the transition to open online learning, just because the metrics and the value points are so different than they are in a traditional e-learning course?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think there's a there's at least at least two organizations that can serve as explicit examples where one had invested over a sort of 18-month, 2-year project building a Moodle, its own installation of Moodle, and really sort of betting the bank on that. And then MOOCs came along, and they were quite interested. And some of the learning and technology people in that project definitely got it. But by that point, the organization, the organization was just too slow. They could not turn around on a dime and say, well, let's build something else complementary side by side and let's figure out where it's useful and how. Nor was it an option to just say, well, there's actually something that has potential that's distinct from what we've been trying to do with Moodle, so we need to include that as well. Which is why, where I think, I mean, what, you know, the idea that things are changing all the time and faster than ever before. Once you understand that thing about the changing nature of knowledge, then you can sort of prepare for that and accept that your Moodle installation is going to need to change in ways that you cannot predict, and build that, even though you don't know the specific things, you can still at least try to account for that, and then try to get the organization and senior leadership and everyone else to accept that that's the reality of the chaotic, fragmented world we live in.
All right, and then a question that Patricia posted in the question area is, how do we encourage companies, Google being one, or other big data companies, to share the deep understanding of big data to assist us to move into new ways of learning? And that's something that you had on the previous slide as well, where you had learning analytics internally within organizations being all red, really that entire process. And, yep. And it makes sense. You're hosting externally, and if someone else is doing your content delivery externally, you may not even have access to the data that you need to improve your design process or to improve teaching and learning. Do you have thoughts on that?
So, I mean, the interesting thing about the Google and IFRC partnership is that Google was very explicit that, especially because of the health-related, the health topic of the community, they did not want to have any access to the data. That was their initial position. But it turns out that in the sort of partnership development process, in fact, IFRC, to be able to make sense of what learners are going to be doing in the community, is going to need the assistance and the capacity of Google's engineers in order to be able to make sense of and provide the feedback loops to actually improve and build this community. So that's actually one of the main incentives for working with a MOOC provider or with an organization with Google is, or with an academic partner, is tapping into a team that can take raw data and help interpret and make sense of it, and also connecting with other organizations, both in higher education and without, so that you can start comparing notes and making sure that you're benefiting from the deeper understandings we're likely to get hopefully the near future.
Great. Well, thanks very much for a well thought out, informative presentation. I'm going to end the recording here, Retta.
Great. Thank you, George.
And just let folks know that we're meeting in 30 minutes. We have Chip Franklin joining us from Parthenon, who will be providing, I think, a deep perspective on MOOCs as corporate training fodder. So needless to say, we've covered a range of aspects of MOOCs so far. We've looked at MOOCs from a marketing development. We've looked at MOOCs from a perspective of how corporations use them to improve some of their relationships with their end users. We've also seen recently with the talk that World Bank did with us this morning, we had a good overview on how MOOCs are actually used as almost an advocacy type of tool or resource. And the session coming up is focused on MOOCs in the corporate training perspective, and this will be a field-based overview, so hopefully you can join us for that. As I mentioned, that starts as of now in about 29 minutes. So thanks all, and we'll chat in a bit.